The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey everybody, it's that time again. Welcome once again to Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. I have with me a friend. This is really crazy to think of, but I met this guy about 35 years ago. That's how long it's been. Boy, can you believe it?
Long time.
I have in the studio with me Alan Rajanis. It had to be late 85 or at the very latest, early 86 when I first met this young man. And he was very, very much impressive on my mind as a young man that worked at the time for Disney, who was educated and went to actually further his education in England.
Yeah.
So I knew you before you went over there.
That's right.
And its impact on your life, further making you the Disney guy that you were. You were a part of education at the time. And got your degree from Disney, or I'm not even sure where that was over there. It wasn't Disney, obviously, there.
Needless to say, I drank the Disney juice.
You
right?
did. You
drank the Disney juice.
I'm talking about Alan Rajanis. I've got to get that out. See, that's what happens when two old friends get together. We get to talking, and all normal protocol is outside.
Isn't that true?
It's nuts.
We probably talked an hour before we even started this.
Well, we did. We did. That is for sure. But Alan Rajanis, his wife Beverly, are literally 35-year friends. And to have you in the studio with me means more than I could ever share.
It's a true joy, Mike. I appreciate you inviting me to be part.
So we became friends early on. And that would be before you got married to your lovely wife.
That's right.
Who we met independently of you. And she was a teacher in our very early Christian school that we had at what was then called Household of Faith.
Correct.
And it was even before it became Metro Life Church.
That's right. That was the name of the church, and the school was American Christian School, ACS.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember that Beverly, you knew Beverly, and Beverly's class, you were getting ready to go to England.
Yeah, and her class adopted me.
And their class, that's
it. That's it. They adopted me because they knew I was going away for a year. And
yes.
They knew I needed a tether home. And they sent me care packages throughout the whole time I was in the UK studying as a student at the University of Nottingham.
Yes.
And I was working on my master's, and I would get the care packages about once a month, filled with popcorn and surprises and notes from students. And, of course, Beverly. And that really started the heartstrings, I think, at that time.
All right. Yeah. And of course, my daughter was involved in that.
That's right.
And so she would have been one that was sending letters or whatever on this care package. But we got to meet with you. Cindy and I got to meet with you before. Again, a single young guy. And just early on, man, you could tell that our hearts were knitted in love for the Savior together. And
right.
Your way of doing, you were very contagious in your love for Jesus.
Well, if you remember, the impetus of the local church at that time that we had the privilege of participating in was the reality of the Christian walk.
Yes.
And I'll never forget the senior pastor often pointing us back to, let's get back to the reality of faith, reality of grace. And those were life-changing messages for me as a young man coming out of college, trying to make sense, coming out of a legalistic background, growing up in a church that had legalistic practices. And now to hear a fresh approach to the gospel of grace
yes.
was life-changing and altering. And that's about the time you and I encountered one another because I had the privilege of attending the church you were serving in.
Yes. I was there in the beginning, in the very beginning. I was only there part-time as well because I was working in radio back then.
That's right.
Because I had gone into radio when we first moved, left a ministry position, worked for WAJL, the radio station that was the only Christian radio station in Orlando back at the time. And I was the morning guy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would have been doing up until 87. And I think you were already in England by then, weren't you?
I was in 86, 87. I had gone over to study and do my graduate work in education psychology.
Yeah.
Took a leave from Disney at that time to go ahead and knock out the formal education. Felt like God opened up some unique doors of opportunity through a scholarship, gave me the privilege of going abroad to study and to serve a local church over there.
You know, you mentioned the doctrines of grace, and so many people, when they grow up in a church where you mention legalism, and sadly, that's a lot of people's experience, and it's more than painful to realize that we can be in a church, and we know that there is no such thing as a perfect church.
That's right.
But many people have attended a church and they never really understood or heard about the grace of God. And I feel very fortunate that God allowed that, the teaching, and that's what made it so special in those early days. And it's still special to me today.
You know, Mike, it was the very thing, the topic of grace, that attracted me to my now wife, Beverly, because she had this, if you will, revelation before I did. And I just so enjoyed the time we spent together as singles, as she would share what God was doing in her heart, in her life, that compelled me to dig deeper, even to look more. And of course, we were in a local church environment that permitted for that type of growth, and it was life-altering.
It is life-altering, and I know that your life it changed, obviously, when you came back, and that friendship with Beverly turned into more than friendship, in the fact that you got engaged and you got married. I happened to be at your wedding, and it was just a wonderful event. And we just couldn't love you more, man.
That's awesome. You know, when I graduated from the University of Nottingham, I came back. I felt like the Lord told me, get married. Yeah. After all this time, you hit the big 3-0, it's time to get married.
Yeah.
And there was a relationship blooming there already. Had laid a foundation for a career with the Disney organization, and felt like God just set us up for success in that way.
Now, I know that you spent a number of years not only with Disney, but in education as well. And that was really something that Disney U did. I mean, it was an education place.
It truly was. And my experience before going to Disney, having taught in an elementary school system for a couple of years, third and fourth grade, it really sunk a hook in me as far as being an educator and seeing even young lives changed at that point. And when I joined the Disney organization, it wasn't so idealistic as being the trainer of Disney University at that time. When I started with the Disney company in the early 80s, Mike, I started as a graveyard custodial host. So like many of those listeners here on your radio program, they start in the mailroom, right? And you go up. There's only one place to go from there. And having swept the streets of the Magic Kingdom and cleaned up that theme park from many a dark night, God was very gracious and opened doors to allow me to use some of those skills and teaching to parlay them into a training role for the Disney company. So I spent many years working at the Disney University and consequently the Disney Institute.
Yes.
Which took a lot of those internal training concepts and helped translate them to the external community, because business people would travel really from around the world to come to the property to understand the Disney approach.
Now, that's what I was going to ask you to explain, because people hearing Disney U or Disney Institute, that might be brand new to them. So explain, if you will, how that Disney took its own model of training and then began to export that.
Yeah, absolutely. The Disney University conceptually started back in California with Disneyland. And I mean, it was just a natural fit that when Walt Disney World opened up in October of 1971, that the primary training mechanism for bringing together a diverse employee group, if you will, to make them cast members needed some intentionality. And so the Disney University put together what they called the Traditions Program in order to introduce individuals to the, if you will, the core values of the organization and the mission statement. Mm-hmm. It was basically get everyone on the same page. That page was, you create happiness and the finest in entertainment for people of all ages everywhere, right? And Disney was deliberate in a two-day format to get that ingrained into their cast members, so that whether you worked on stage or backstage, you were singing from the same song sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really propelled Disney forward in this world of corporate culture, is they laid a foundation of success in training to get people to, if you will, live the core values as they serve their guests. And that's what distinguished Disney, particularly then, from all other organizations, was the intentionality that the Disney University brought to the table.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't just about the initial training, but it was ongoing leadership development as well.
So you know, one part of it is always their imagineering, of kind of thinking out of the box. That's something that is always, to me, set Disney's approach aside from just about any other model that I'd ever seen. But the way they did that and the way that they were able to innovate, mm-hmm. it's just amazing.
Well, you know, that the idea of creativity and innovation was encouraged throughout the organization, really, whether or not you were actually serving as an Imagineer, if you were a custodial host like myself. A part of that core value system, again, was to get people working and living in a way that you're looking for ways to enhance the guest experience, mm-hmm. which ultimately enhanced your own as an employee. But yes, the Imagineering group is certainly a unique group of talented individuals that brought to life a lot of show concepts for our guest enjoyment.
But that's really exciting. And I know that you took this role very, very naturally, and you got to go to Europe and kind of recruit for other people over there as well, right?
Well, you know, Disney, with tens of thousands of different job descriptions available, certainly makes for a great career growth for any individual. And so you can try different things. So I went down the path of being the Disney trainer and worked with external audiences to understand the Disney approach. And there was a season where I had the opportunity to represent Disney through a marketing function, and that was to recruit on behalf of the Walt Disney World College and International Programs, and had the privilege of traveling the world over. Particularly, it was in the year 2000. If you remember, in 2000, as we were getting ready for the new millennium, right? Disney had the goal of having at least one employee or cast member from each country around the globe working on the property come January 1, 2000. So we were a team of about 12 people at that time, and we scoured the globe for a better part of a year looking for individuals to come be on property as part of the millennial celebration.
Did they?
Yeah, we did.
My
market was Europe, so I lucked out, you know? I lucked out big time, particularly on the continent. But
I had an
awesome time representing all things Disney to interested candidates who wanted to be part of the team.
Wow. If there's one company that could make such a goal happen, it had to be Disney.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't talk highly enough of that experience at that time.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So, Alan, your heart for education went on. I know you served for several years. We served together at that very same church for a number of years, you working for the school, kind of the outgrowth of what ended up being later it called something different, but it was that same concept.
Yeah, the Regent Academy.
The Regent Academy.
Yeah, TRA, you remember? Yeah, after almost about 20 years with the Disney company, I felt like God opened the door to really fulfill the desire of my heart, my wife's heart, and that was to serve in full-time ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, God used the training at the Mouse House, if you will, to prepare me for ministry. And, of course, we had been attending the same fellowship for those many years.
Right.
So grew up in the local church and had a heart for the people and for education. And the timing was just right to bring forth a program whereby we were serving homeschoolers as well as a site-based program, because at that time the church had just opened up a building,
mm-hmm.
right? And so had the privilege of coming in and giving oversight, if you will, as the head master and developing an educational team and a program which served both groups, homeschoolers and site-based needs.
Mm. Well, those are fun memories.
They
and
are.
Mixed in there was this terrible day when TRA actually was in class on a Tuesday morning, September 11th, 2001. I'll never forget that day.
Oh, Mike, I won't either. I think you were back in the office, but I was in the chapel that morning, and we were just doing a morning service for all the kids. We opened every morning with prayer, had them all inside the chapel, and we had just concluded chapel. I walked outside the door, and one of our fellow parent teachers came up to me and said, "Have you heard the news?" And that's when I walked into the back office and found the leadership team gathered around a TV monitor watching it live.
I was there that morning early to meet a computer guy, a network guy, IT, if you will. And he walks in, his face is shaken, and it was like 8:45 or something like that. And I said, "What's up?" And he goes, "Well, have you heard?" And I said, "Heard what?" And he tells the story, what he had just heard on the radio. And so we didn't have a TV right in my office, but I had my computer screen. So I went, and things have changed a lot with the internet even since that day, but we did have that to look at. And sure enough, they're right on the headlines of whatever news service I typed in that day. There it was, the picture of the tower burning, and the second tower had not been hit yet.
No.
And so we were talking about it, and that's when we had the idea, well, let's go into the library where there was a TV, and we were the ones that turned it on and got it in and got the other guys gathered around and watched almost in real time as the second tower
unfolded,
was hit.
Right?
Yeah.
It,
And that guy never, I told this story recently, that guy never did any work that day for us because his next appointment was the SunTrust Tower, and he did not want to go up that tower.
I don't blame him.
Yeah, it was a terrible day. But those are the kinds of things, those are milestone days when we're doing things and we were there in that same building together. You know, we never know how God is using events like that,
right,
and even seasons like what we had together, because mm-hmm. it wasn't that long later, my wife and I were relocating to Gainesville. I know that you and your family went to Texas for mm-hmm. a season as well.
We did. Right. We had an awesome time. We moved to Houston, Texas to build a network marketing company.
And that's when we were gone. So we were already mm-hmm. out, and you were out there for a while.
God led us out there with a great group of people, and it was an opportunity to develop further business skills. I think God wanted to build into me, particularly to appeal to the entrepreneurial side. And it was a great education piece for a number of years.
Yeah.
We love Texas, a great place, loved it very much, but we had family and relatives, relationships here in Orlando that we eventually returned back to.
It's really hard to not have that when you're used to that.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, I mean, we did it. We left Indiana in 1985 and we moved, and it was just one of those things where we're where we are now in Florida. That was where we stayed. But as a lot of times people who do leave from their home, they find themselves back even within a year.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were glad to be back. Again, God's purpose in moving us to Texas was to build some things into us that he had later had designed that we didn't even know about. Hindsight is 2020, right?
Yes,
and so
it
to
is.
So to this side of the microphone, you look back, you go, yeah. Oh my gosh, all those pieces and parts start to make sense. Even as we reminisced before coming on air, we looked at all the different milestones in our life and our history together, that God would be so kind to bring us to a place today that we could reflect and honor him in this conversation about how faithful he's been.
Yes, absolutely. I agree completely. And he has been faithful, and he will continue to be faithful. Now, before we take a break, it would be right for us to talk about your company that you work for right now. Mm-hmm. We've had John Rivers on this show before, but you work for what has to be one of Central Florida's most well-known and well-loved barbecue places, Four Rivers.
Yes. What a distinct privilege it is to work for John Rivers and the Four Rivers Restaurant Group. I started working for John back in 2016, and he brought me on board initially to work with the development and training of his leaders in the organization. And as there was growth and turnover in the company, eventually he just said, here, take care of all things people. So I have the privilege of taking care of his human resource function, his leadership development, and manage the culture on behalf of the organization.
Now, when you say culture, and there is a culture in a lot of businesses, but it really is not in every business. It's not in every restaurant when you go in where you feel like you're in someplace special. And that's what I feel when I go into Four Rivers. I mean, you guys do it right. Everything from the decor, the logo, it feels distinctly barbecue.
It does, doesn't it?
And that is something. I mean, you've got the brand on your hat. I mean, it's there. Boy, and it has that delicious barbecue taste that is nothing like it.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It was one of the things that compelled me to join their organization was the food factor, right, initially. But, you know, that culture piece is so important. Our audience out there, if you read your leadership books on business, you know that culture is one of the leading chapters for many organizations. And it's that culture piece that is going to determine your sustainability as a company moving forward. Mm-hmm. When you take your eye off the culture ball, your culture becomes diluted. And what happens is your companies become ineffective at achieving business goals, team engagement, employee engagement. And you become, if you will, no better than a Circuit City or Sears
mm-hmm.
Roebuck
mm-hmm.
or, you know, just name companies that have lost their way or their vision because of a diluted culture.
Well, let's pick up on that and talk about that, because that's very interesting and I think very helpful to any business owner who may be listening. My guest is Alan Rajanis, and he's with Four Rivers, and we're going to be back together in just a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're on The Shepherd. back again with Alan Rajanis, a longtime friend, and it's really crazy for, I haven't seen you in years, man.
Mike, it's been too long.
It has been a long time, but every time I see you, you're one of those, and this is something I believe that almost everybody will have somebody in their life where they can relate to this. You have a friend in your life that it doesn't matter whether you've been apart for 10 years or 5 years or 1 year mm-hmm. or 1 month. The next time you're talking, it's just like nothing ever was in between.
Just pick it up and keep running, right?
That's it. It's like, that's true friendship.
Yes.
And that's what we have with you and Beverly. And I'm so grateful for that. And
thank you.
You know, we've both gone through changes. We've both gone through multiple cities. And now at this point in our lives, God, in his marvelous way, mm-hmm. we were talking earlier about the grace of God. And I think that one of the evidences of his grace is just realizing how faithful he is.
Mm-hmm.
He's been faithful to your family.
Yes. And even though there are some moments in the course of that journey, it felt like, where is God?
Yep.
Right? You have to purpose yourself and remind yourself of the faithful walk that you're on and you're on the journey. And despite the pain points, you know, when you get to the other side, and in this season of life, you and I can look back and go, oh yeah,
yeah,
God is faithful.
Yeah.
We know when we run into the pain point, you know, because of the examples of past life experiences, he's going to get you through again.
He is.
But, a decade or two ago, those were certainly initial learning experiences walking through some of those challenges and difficulties.
You know, I think there are phases. My mom used to use that phrase with me all the time. There are phases of this process where it goes from being something that you embrace. And I think that's what we did in the mid-80s in our walk with God. This was exciting. It resonated. But we hadn't every experience yet that we were going to have, hadn't happened yet. But you find out on the other side of those experiences that there are pain moments in the middle of it. And I think some people are surprised by that. Some people are maybe jumping out of the boat too quick of their life because it looks like things just weren't working out
mm-hmm.
the way that they thought it was going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people jump out of their walk with God and they give up on the church. They give up way too early.
Mike, we've seen too many examples of that, haven't we?
Yeah.
Too many examples.
But you know, when you hang on
mm-hmm.
and you say, God, you're going to see me through, we find out, now I find out that teaching, that embracing, the truth of God's word, the truth of the grace of God, it's really been proven to be faithful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great.
Right.
Now, you're a marketplace minister, my man. You've been in ministry before from a standpoint of you've gotten your paycheck from a ministry before.
That's right.
And now you're getting your paycheck from a barbecue place.
That's right. You know, when I left full-time ministry, I really felt like God, as part of that messaging, was to take the gospel into the marketplace. And to make impact with the decisions, the hiring process, operations through a gospel lens, if you will. And so I initially started as a consultant in the market because there were a number of people calling me to come assist and help. And I've got involved with many different types of business opportunities, which are really quite fun. But along that way in the journey, as my kids were getting older, they were picking up their first job through a Four River Smokehouse. And as they did, they got to know John and his family, and John often hosts family events
mm-hmm.
for his team.
Yeah.
And I had the occasion of to meet John at a family event once, and he heard about that Disney background. So he started down the road of questioning, like we started earlier, like, well, how does Disney do it? How do they train for consistency? How do you communicate culture? How do you monitor that? And as I would attempt to explain that, he basically said, oh, come do it for me. Come work from our organization. And I contemplated, I was kind of enjoying the life of a consultant, if you will, just out and about in the marketplace. And I wasn't sure I wanted to be an employee again necessarily. But I remember having a conversation with John saying, hey, John, I worked for a company for almost 20 years that made money telling stories. So, John, what is your story? If you had to give me the quick 30-second pitch, what is your story? And he just looked at me and said, Alan, I'm in the barbecue ministry. And when I heard that, he had me hooked.
Oh, man.
And so with that, I said, tell me more. And you find out when you research about Four Rivers and our history, that our roots were founded in ministry in 2004 when John hosted a barbecue event that was a blessing to a family that was suffering, had a child suffering from a terminal medical condition. And he just did it to serve. And in 2004, 450 people turned out to this big cookout he had hosted in his backyard to raise money on behalf of this family. And that really was the launch, the impetus of his community involvement, because he was a CEO sitting in $1.5 billion pharmaceutical company. Mm-hmm. But he would tell you he was very unhappy. Mm-hmm. You know, the only times he was happy was on weekends when he was cooking and giving back. And his wife said, "John, this is nuts. You just need to follow your heart and your passion and serve the Lord fully." And that's what he did. He retired early and launched the business. And as the business took off and he's finding these growth pains, I come along and have some insight about culture management because he's planning restaurants all around the state. Some insights about how to manage that culture, how to train team members to be all on the same page, and really how to communicate barbecue ministry to a non-ministry population and to get them to align to a value system that creates the Four Rivers that you know and love today. Mm-hmm. And so that's what really was my entry point into the organization. And eventually, as I came in to train, he passed the plate and said, "Please take care of all things people," which included human resources and anything that touches lives of individuals, leadership development, the culture piece. And that's what I had the privilege of doing today.
Now, you know that I was up in Gainesville when you would have joined on all of this. And I had no idea that that's what you were doing when I was up there. But I tell you what, when they opened up the Four Rivers in Gainesville, we all smiled because I'd been
prayers were answered.
Yeah, I had been to Four Rivers when they opened up the new place on Fairbanks, right, on one of my visits. Because even though we lived up there, we had kids down here, so we were still going to Orlando quite regularly. And oh man, I discovered that Four Rivers the first time I ever went there. It was a treat, and I'm thinking this is something special. And then we heard that they were opening up the new one in Butler Plaza in Orlando, or rather in Gainesville. Yep. And so we started doing something. You talk about a happy family. We started using Four Rivers, and we're still doing this to this day for Christmas, our Christmas dinner.
Nice.
When we have family together, we buy the whole catered Four Rivers.
The Happy Herd.
We're there, man. Nice. We buy Four Rivers for everybody. Rather than my wife having to slave and cook for everyone, we Four Rivers it.
Nice.
It's just
wonderful.
I will
pass it along to John. He'll be encouraged.
Yeah, that's what we've done for years now. And we do it here in Orlando, back again, doing the same thing. You talk about culture. Explain that a little bit more now, how is it that you're able to train people to catch a vision? How do you do that?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, because I think many of those interested in working for Four Rivers are initially enamored, like yourself, with the food and the experience, right? So they really want to understand what makes this place different, what makes it unique. And yes, we're a barbecue ministry, but John had the wisdom of putting together a value system when he launched the company in October 2009 officially. A value system that has seven labels that are safety rails for how we function and behave as an employee population. We talk about servitude, our approach to serving the community, serving one another. It's hospitality on steroids. Integrity is another important facet to that core value, our core values. And it's who you are when no one's looking, right? Faith. We tell everyone who comes through the door that's interested in a role that we are a faith-based company. That doesn't mean you necessarily have to ride on the dotted line, "I'm a faith-based person," because I have people of all shapes, sizes, and colors that come and work for the organization. We just want people to know that as we run the company, we run it based on biblical values. I mean, John, when we meet as a leadership team, we open in prayer. And it's not just the passing prayer, "God bless us today," or the food that's before us. It is prayer for managers. It's prayer for one another. It's prayer. They're intercessory in nature, where we are petitioning God on behalf of the organization. And many of us have the Word of God in our offices to consult when we're struggling with a business decision or a people issue, if you will. So the faith piece is important to us. And then consistency. In the food business, you got to be consistent. That brisket you had in Gainesville has got to be just as good as it is in Winter Park, down in Coral Springs, Tampa, wherever you go to a Four Rivers location, it's got to be on point. So we're consistent with product, but not only product, but with our service levels. Mm-hmm. So we create the Four Rivers experience that you referenced earlier about what you feel when you walk into the environment. That's no accident. We want you to feel cared for. And then the whole idea of intentionality is another label we use in managing our culture. The way we define that approach is we move with purpose. Mm-hmm. We intend to take care of things expeditiously with purpose. And there is no reason to find yourself meandering around the restaurant with no focus or mission. We tell people you got time to lean, you got time to clean, right? And so we bring people in. They may work at a register, but they may work in the dining room or back of the house. So they're cross-trained to add value to the role and to the company. And then the final two words I introduce in tandem with one another because they're truly values that differentiate us in the marketplace. And that is the core values of exceptionality and creativity. And if you think about it, it was John who brought brisket as a marquee item to the menu back in 2009 that others started replicating. You have other popular barbecue chains that elevated brisket on the menu. Mm-hmm. You have other franchises that popped up that copied our model. And so that's kind of flattering, if you will. But you always have to keep one step ahead, right? You have to be exceptional. You have to think in terms of creativity. So you introduce additional brands. So we just don't have the smokehouses, as you know. We have the Coop, which mm-hmm. is in Winter Park, Florida. And that Coop there serves as our fondness for diners. So it reflects me in the diners that John enjoyed when he was a young one.
Last time my son was in town, we went there.
Oh, did you?
Oh, my goodness.
Chicken and waffles?
Oh, my goodness. Loved it. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So what brisket is to Smokehouse, chicken is to the Coop.
Yep.
It's just a popular destination. And then we have two other brands that we've introduced, both of which were during the pandemic or just before. The Cantina de Barbacoa is our food truck down at Disney Springs. We took the idea of barbecue, added a Latin flair to it with influences from the Caribbean and Mexico, and came up with a menu that Disney loves. And the food truck has done phenomenally well down at the Disney Springs, so much so that when they look at the fourth phase, they're talking about adding a brick and mortar facility where we can properly host guests in a restaurant environment mm-hmm. through the Cantina de Barbacoa. And then during pandemic, we introduced the Four Roots Cafe, which is down at the Orlando Science Center. And it takes the concepts of you think of maybe bole or chipotle type of menus where you have rice bowls and quinoa bases with proteins added on top. Mm-hmm. Somewhat of a healthy twist. It's down there at the Orlando Science Center, and we're looking to expand that even further. So these brands, Mike, they allow us to be creative and exceptional in the menus we create, the guest experiences we desire to perpetuate, and it allows us to maintain market share. The goal is this, and what I really love about John is that in running this barbecue ministry, he's not profit-driven at all, but he's profit-focused. He understands what it means to be a good steward of the business and to honor God with those daily decisions mm-hmm. on the money he's earned, so much so that we allocate a certain percentage of our funds back to the community. And so just before pandemic, we're giving up to $1 million a year to the community to support those that we have the privilege of serving through our restaurant environments.
And I know that heart that he has for these ministries and outreaches that he gives to, you know, it's just amazing how self-replicating all of this is. The more that they appreciate Four Rivers for what you're doing, then they take part in Four Rivers. And the more they take part, the more it's like you've got the best word of mouth going out there, man. That's how this thing has just gone crazy.
And it's not by accident. I mean, you asked how we manage that. We use these seven core values as our safety rails. Mm-hmm. These are how we want to respond at all levels of leadership and roles within the organization so that we create the environment that you're describing.
Now, you know, you told me something years ago. It was during a time when we were doing some talk about Disney and all of that. You told me something that was kind of a staple in this kind of teaching and training and learning how to really meet the customer's need. You said a manager's got to tell them and then tell them again and then tell them what you told them.
That's
the way you express. I may not have
Man,
that.
You remember that?
I do.
Tell them what you're going to tell them. You tell them what you told them.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never forgot that. And I thought, you know, I think the reason a lot of people aren't successful in training people under them, and this is true, I believe it's true for churches, and I think it's true for businesses. It's true for groups of teachers. I mean, if you want something done right, it's not going to be a one and done thing.
No, that's right. Yeah. It's all in the name of repetition, right? And you got to look for ways to be creative in the repetition. You tell them what you're going to tell them. You tell them what you told them, right? And then you ask, what did you hear me say?
That's right. That's right.
There's your measurement right
That's
there.
That's right.
That's the metric. That's the KPI you're looking for.
That's right. That's the key performance indicator.
Yep.
That's exactly right. And I think I never forgot that because it was so impressive. I don't think, though, I had ever heard it quite like that. You know, a lot of times people treat their businesses the way I've heard a lot of husbands say about their wives. Honey, you know I love you. I told you one time.
That's right.
If I change my mind, I'll tell you again.
Right. Yeah, you're right, man.
But you can't live that way, can you?
No, sir.
And no business, whether it has a heart for ministry or not, is going to really succeed unless they are purposeful, unless they are intentional at training and ongoing training. And then after you think you've got them trained, they need to be trained again.
Yeah, we think of the three-legged stool as a illustration for our team in that we've got to take care of the team, take care of the guests, and steward the business properly. Three-legged stool, remove one of those legs and the whole thing goes over. It doesn't stand. It also applies to our approach to just training the team. You got to have the proper training programs in place. You got to demonstrate a thorough communication plan, just as we talked about a moment ago, communication. And you got to have care. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, right? So that care element, which is, you know, whether it's through your benefit plans or through your compensation strategies, through recognition piece, all that translates into the end, a quality guest experience.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, you guys are doing it. And one of the things that is so wonderful as people who get to know the organization, they're really getting to know John because it's an extension of really this heart that God called him to do. And then you realize God adds a person like you, who you have a heart for ministry as well. And then you have a team. And the beautiful thing is to see a team that reflects what the owner is trying to get done. And as believers, we're doing that in our lives. So you're giving a perfect place for someone to hear the gospel.
Not only in through a traditional restaurant environment, but John is so generous with the facilities. We have a number of churches that will meet in our restaurants. We have men's groups that fellowship regularly. We pour out the coffee for them. I have a men's fellowship as a marketplace ministry that meets the first Monday of every month, meets at the Coop, 7 o'clock in the morning. And we just break bread and look at the gospel and, you know, talk about what God's doing in and through business. And I know a number of men who participate in that area who are involved with marketplace ministries. You know, there's all kinds of activity throughout Orlando that brings attention to this.
Give us your website.
FourRiversSmokehouse.com.
All right. Alan Rajanis, I can't tell you how much fun this has been today. Thank you for coming and being a part and sharing from your heart and teaching us, really. Again, tell us again and then remind them what you told them.
Well, hey, and if you know anybody out there that wants to work for Four Rivers, Mike, send them my way.
All right.
We have a careers tab on that website. Would love to talk to them.
Okay, that's great. Alan Rajanis, my guest. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. Okay, we're back now, and I have on the line our good friend Matt Staver from the Liberty Council. Matt, great to have you back on the line here today.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Regarding this mandate, there's not a day that goes by when we're not hearing a new update, a company that is basically dealing with perhaps letting go a number of their employees, airline being affected. I'm hearing about truckers being affected. Matt, what in the world is going on, and how can we get out of this?
Well, speaking of people being let go, we just want a temporary restraining order against North Shore University Health System in Illinois on Friday, prohibiting them from purging its employees that filed for these religious exemptions to their vaccine mandate. While we were actually preparing for this, just got an email from a woman that says, North Shore, despite this injunction against them, they said that turn in your badge and you're done. You're gone. So this person ends by saying, I am so hurt by what they have done. This is an ER nurse, and she's being treated like garbage. You know, that's the problem that we're seeing across the country. Vaccine mandates, whether they're from the public sector or the private sector, are abusive.
All of this begs the question, Matt, is there any such thing anymore as rule of law?
Well, that's a real question. And, you know, our lawsuits, for example, the one that we have coming up in Tampa, on behalf of all the members of the military, federal employees, and federal civilian contractors really addresses that issue, because it comes from Joe Biden. He directed his Department of Defense to issue this mandate for the military, and then he issued a mandate for federal employees and federal civilian contractors. That's illegal, because he's not giving them a choice.
Mm-hmm.
He's telling them, get the shot by a certain date, irrespective of your religious beliefs that are in conflict with the shot, because they all used aborted fetal cells in their testing or development phase. You've got to get the shot, otherwise you'll be terminated, or in the case of the military, you'll be disciplined, including dishonorable discharge. That's lawlessness, because what we have is none of these shots are fully FDA approved. Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson. There is no FDA fully approved COVID shot available to anyone, period. Now, number one, the FDA did approve the BioNTech Comirnaty. But number two, the FDA correctly said it's not available. So none of the shots are FDA approved.
Wouldn't you think that a lot of America right now are under the impression that the at least the Pfizer and Moderna shots are approved?
Yeah, they probably are. And so here's a couple of things that are happening. Since there's no FDA approved COVID shot available, they're all under the federal law known as the Emergency Use Authorization Law.
Mm-hmm.
That law is very clear that individuals have, quote, the option to accept or refuse the shots. End of story. You can refuse without any consequences, period. So any of these mandates are unlawful. And the BioNTech Comirnaty is not going to be available for months and months and months, certainly not this year, well into 2022, and maybe even beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So all we have left are EUA COVID shots available, and the law is very clear. Moreover, even if you had an FDA-authorized shot that is available, which is not, but assuming that it is, you could not force the other shots that are not FDA-approved because they still remain under EUA. And yet that's what they're doing. They're forcing the Johnson & Johnson, the Moderna, and the Pfizer. And for members of the military, these are people that put their lives on the line. They've sacrificed everything.
Mm-hmm.
They've missed birthdays, and they've missed the first words of their baby. They've missed the first step. They've missed Christmases and so forth. And they did it because they love this country. They were in the most dangerous places in the world. Some of their colleagues never came home, or they came home in bits and pieces.
Right.
And now they're being told, if you don't get this shot, it doesn't matter how long you've worked, what you've done, how many medals, what your rank is, you will be discharged. And in some cases, they're being threatened with dishonorable discharge. You see, they lose everything, and they have a badge of dishonor that will follow them forever.
Mm. That is so sad, and it makes no sense at all. So let's go back to this scenario. An injunction is actually made. You won that. It's a court-ordered stop from the judge, and yet this company in Illinois that you're talking about is basically refuting that. And so we've heard similar stories of different healthcare systems, even in Florida, where they're still going against some of the mandates, even though the governor of Florida has said that this can't happen. Yet there are plenty of instances where they're continuing to do this. So my question is, when a judge comes and says there's got to be a halt to this, and the company or the HR director at that company or whoever says, nope, you do it and you're fired still, then is there any follow-up legally to that?
Oh, yes, there'll be consequences. There'll be consequences. These people will be held accountable. We will make sure to it.
Mm-hmm.
They will not be able to violate the law forever. We're not going to let this go. These people are lawbreakers that are forcing these COVID shots. Not only that, they're inhumane. I've never seen anything, whether it's from the government to our men and women in the military, our military heroes, or the healthcare to our healthcare heroes that ran to the point of danger, our first responders, our law enforcement. I've never seen anything where they're treated so abusively. My brother-in-law, he works at Florida Power and Light. His first and only job was that company, right out of high school. He became employed on June 1, 1980. He's now into his, moving toward his 42nd year of employment. He was considering retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And he's only had one job. He gets an email. In fact, he had a heart attack on the job. And they revived him in the parking lot. It's
wow.
an amazing story. And he continues working for FP&L. So this guy now is approaching his 42nd year, one job only in his whole life, loves the company, gets an email just recently and told you have to be fully vaccinated by January 10th, otherwise you will be terminated.
Yeah, not only terminated, now, but often some of these people are having all of their rights and all of their retirement and all of the other benefits that are due them, they're gone too.
Yes, in my brother-in-law's case, he'll be able to retire. He's one of the fortunate ones because he's now vested.
Okay.
But others are like a year, 2 years away from vesting in their retirement, and they will lose everything.
Yeah.
Because they haven't reached that vesting number yet, even though they put many, many years into the employment. They haven't reached that magic number to vest, and they'll lose everything. So they're not only looking at loss of income, how to pay the bills, how to feed their family, but what they have been working for retirement is gone if they don't take these shots.
Now, this is also mind-boggling. When we look at New York and the situation with the governor in New York having to really disgracefully resign, if the government at that level, and we have already said the federal government is also guilty now and doing things that they have no authority over doing, and yet they're doing it.
Yeah.
So at some point in time, there has to be a reckoning. Like you said, you're not going to give up. But when the very highest elected officials are the ones that are doing the wrongs, what can we do?
Well, that's the frustrating thing for most people. Because people understand if you violate the law, there's consequences. That's what's going to happen to any regular, ordinary person. But some of these politicians, they violate the law. It's a very serious violation of the law. And they get away with it because they have connections.
Mm-hmm.
That is a double standard. And that has to come to an end. I can tell you we're working around the clock. We're working with tens of thousands of people, helping them with regards to these COVID mandates. We're pushing back. We've gotten a lot of religious exemptions, but then we have, you know, sad stories like this right here that I just mentioned to you.
Yeah.
About my brother-in-law, about this nurse in Illinois, where actually we won an injunction
mm-hmm.
against the same hospital. There's real issues there with regards to the rule of law, and we're going to make sure that we enforce the rule of law. Moreover, what we're looking at in addition is a national crisis that is just upon us. Healthcare, you look at Maine, they're ready to terminate 2,000 nurses, maybe more.
Mm-hmm. And
they already have a shortage of nurses in Maine.
And the Supreme Court just punted on that one, didn't they?
Yes, unfortunately, they did. And that was unfortunate because three justices, Gorsuch, Thomas, and Alito, they had a very clear dissent and gave clear legal reasons why the court should have stepped in now, not later, but now.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna continue to pursue that case, and we'll be back at the Supreme Court hopefully very soon. But the unfortunate thing is it may be a little late to help these people in Maine that are being terminated right now.
Mm-hmm. It's just so amazing to me to try to get my brain around the impact. And you're talking about a national crisis. Matt, if this thing carries through as it looks like it's going to, unless God somehow gives us an intervention, then all of the truckers that are saying they won't be driving anymore, all of these military
right.
people are going to be let go. What is going to happen in those arenas?
Well, here's first of all, let's look at healthcare. We already mentioned that. There's going to be a shortage of nurses and other doctors and everyone within the healthcare, all the people in between, all the healthcare. That's going to affect patient care.
Mm-hmm.
So when you need patient care, you're not going to have it because they're going to be short-staffed. Let's move over to transportation. we represent U.S. Freedom Flyers, and they have a consortium now of not just people in the airline industry, they represent every airline in terms of employees. And they have 35,000 people that's part of this. It represents air, cargo, and passenger, ground, and rail. So those people, they're either going to be terminated or they're going to walk off the job. Either way, it's a catastrophe. That means you're not going to get your medicine, your food. We have a national transportation crisis just as we're entering the busiest time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Law enforcement, same way. Law enforcement in many of these cities are saying we're not going to get the shot. They're threatened with termination. And we have this in the first responders. In New York, for example, you have thousands of first responders, firefighters particularly, who have called in sick. Now, they're going to either be terminated or they're just not going to show up for work in protest. So you're talking about EMS, firefighters, law enforcement, transportation of every level, healthcare, military. It's a national crisis.
And then we have to see what it's going to be like. We don't know what it's going to be like. I mean, we're in uncharted territory. This has never happened at this level before. But I guess then
we're
going to find out a new layer of that question, whatever happened to the law, the rule of law, whatever happened to it. And what is the answer for America when we get into that boat?
Well, I think there's two things. One, we have to push back in the courts, and we're doing that. And we have a big hearing coming up later this month on behalf of all the members of the military, like I said, federal employees and federal civilian contractors. It's a big case. Number two, I think people are standing up and they're saying enough. So whether it's health care, they're either going to be terminated or they're going to walk off the job.
Right.
Consequences are the same. They're not going to be forced. And the reason why, you have to ask yourself, why are the healthcare workers, law enforcement, first responders, like, for example, the ones in Orlando, Orange County, many of them said they don't want the shot. Why? Because they've had to actually treat people as first responders, as firefighters, who have been injured from the shots.
Mm-hmm.
And they've seen it firsthand. And they don't want to put it in their own bodies. Plus, they have religious objections. Plus, they also have the fact that they should be the one to determine what is injected into their veins and not the government, not the employer.
Oh.
So they're standing up.
Oof.
And so I think these employers, the government, they've underestimated the will of the people.
And it's going to be interesting to see what happens when that all comes together. And Matt, I thank you for being with me today. And we're continuing to pray not only for this important need, but to pray for you and the Liberty Council and the amazing work that you're doing. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And for those that need information or know somebody who's being forced to get the shot against their will, they can go to lc.org, and click the Legal Help tab, fill out the Legal Help form, watch the video and the other samples that we have there, and then we'll be in constant contact through telephone conferences and through email.
That's wonderful. Always great to have you on the program, Matt. And thank you, friends, for joining us today on the program. We'll see you next time right here on The Shepherd.